And we are back with episode 373 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and, okay, does this mean the machine's in the red universe or the blue universe?
This is Bronze Thumb from Australia's, slightly evil sibling.
Okay. And obviously, we are going to be talking about some of our favorite shows, and as usual, you are invited to listen along as we have our little commentary. But first, Edmund, I think you need to let the audience know something. And I'm not talking about your shoe size.
Okay. As always, our strict policy is we will spoil absolutely everything about these episodes, so we certainly hope that you have seen them, but as always, we've tried to wait a week or so before we dive into all this.
All right, and before we go over the rainbow, let's go ahead and start with Supernatural, and here's the promo.
Oz is real, it's part of the fairy realm.
You have no idea what's in Oz.
There's all kinds of danger.
The witch.
The wicked witch? Dorothy?
Flying monkeys.
She's going to destroy Oz.
Big fan. Love your work.
Supernatural, only Tuesday, 9, 8 central on the CW.
All right, and that is Supernatural, Season 9, Episode 4, Slumber Party. Sam and Dean meet Dorothy from Oz, yes, and the Wicked Witch when they locate an ancient computer in the Men of Letters house that dislodges a hidden hex bag that in turn unleashes a magical green-webbed wall. Dorothy became trapped in the web years ago to stop the witch from finding the key that would open the gate that connected their world to Oz. Ah, yes, and this is Supernatural meets The Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
I'd have said Once Upon a Winchester.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, and unfortunately, at least in my opinion, it kind of was on the level of some of Once Upon a Time in some cases. But Bronstone, why don't you go ahead and start us off? What did you think of this in general terms, anyway?
Oh, I'm still kind of struggling to decide whether I really liked it or not, because for all the little individual things that I thought were cool, having Charlie back was always fun, and Crowley is always a hoot. There was just such a by the numbers quality to the episode. It never really felt very suspenseful, very funny, very well plotted or anything like that. It felt like such a hollow episode.
Hmm. How about you, Edmund? Your thoughts here?
Yeah, no, I actually had a kind of thinking along similar lines, although, it was more, not necessarily by the numbers quality, as it was almost like they were trying to shove too much stuff into this. I understand in terms of by the time they got to the end, sort of what they were trying to do with having Charlie come in, for her, this most recent guest appearance, and now they've been building up and with her, trying her hand at being a hunter and, wanting adventure. But, in a way, it really wound up feeling to me like, I almost wish, we'd had a Charlie episode and then we could have had discovering, the Batcave's past, via finding Dorothy, as a whole, as it could have been a whole separate episode. That it was like they're trying to jam these two things together, and I'm not sure it really wound up working all that well overall.
Hmm. Yeah, that's remarkably close to my thoughts on this episode. About halfway through the first act, I started wondering if indeed I had turned on the wrong TV show.
Yes.
And it didn't really stop feeling that way through the entire episode. I never felt like we were properly in a Supernatural episode. And that's true. That's been true, really, whenever Charlie has shown up. Not that it's been bad, necessarily, every time she showed up. Certainly, we loved it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the third time, we also enjoyed it quite a bit. But this time, it felt odd. Because in the past, it's been okay to see the world of the Winchesters through Charlie's point of view. This time, it felt just like they didn't fully commit to that. And instead, they were just... The perspective was just plain off. I mean, it really did feel like the people behind Once Upon a Time made an episode of Supernatural for them. the stuff with Oz, in, at least for me, did not really mesh well with the series. Based on what we've seen, it felt too fantastical for Supernatural. And then we're talking about a show where they've had actual gods and elementals and everything else in some way, shape, or form. And this felt way too just, I don't know, just out of place. As much as I understand the idea of Frank Elbaum or whatever, being one of the men of letters, that was a neat little twist, and I actually really liked Dorothy. She was kind of like kick-ass steampunk in a way, which of course would be right up Charlie's alley, but the whole thing about Oz just didn't work for me at all.
Yeah, it felt like they jammed something from another show into Supernatural. It never gelled. The concepts of it, even if some of the characters and some of the ideas did. Like, I agree. I thought the idea of Vaughn being a man of letters and Dorothy as a cool hunter, those were cool. Those I didn't mind at all. But then, it was anytime they brought up the odd stuff, the Wicked Witch sort of thing, it was an intrusive presence on the rest of the episode.
Now, as far as the actual deal with Charlie, and I love the idea that she's out there becoming the first woman of letters, if one wants to call it, although she's not really the first, because we saw in the past they had, you know, female members, but I guess they were somewhat subordinate. Here, I really feel like she's found her niche in the group, which, you know, also made the end of this episode infuriating to a certain extent, because it's like, okay, you've really established her as being a part of their extended family, right down to Dean making a choice to save her life versus beat the big bad, which is exactly what he would do for someone he felt was family, and then you shuffle her off to Oz.
I just really
didn't like that at all.
Yeah, and I guess, what gets to me is, you know, is yes, even though, you know, they have supernatural, you know, I mean, that with the small s, realms, you know, I mean, you know, and different gods and things, but it was also, you know, that's, it's all just, you know, different elements of, you know, this world they live in, and this idea of, you know, yeah, you know, going for that, you know, concept of, you know, oh, you know, oh no, you know, this literary world really, you know, really was this other dimension, just really, really did feel off, and certainly as well, I mean, I completely agree that, you know, the setting her up as, as the first true woman of letters, and then having her go away at the end, I mean, yeah, just, it was, I was, you know, kind of fuming at the TV through all that, you know, and then, oh, okay, this is going to be your latest device to, yes, have her go off and then have a means of bringing her back later when you wish to, but it really felt like a plot device and not like something that was growing out of the, out of the episode. And then of course, you know, the other, you know, big elephant in the room is, you know, the fact that Charlie died and yet again,
yep,
you know, call on Zeke to bring her back.
I mean, that's so, 3 in a row. You know, when do I get to be right? Yeah. This is going to be a crutch.
Yeah. Well, I think three strikes and you're right in this case. So it's,
yeah,
you know, especially since they don't seem to be, you know, they don't seem to be building up the suspicion enough for it to be what I was hoping it would be. So.
I'll be fair and say it does feel like a hybrid of the idea, because he is slowly, but man, it could Dean be more guilty in the way he's dealing with things? Come on. Mm-hmm. At this point, Sam is just being an idiot. And maybe that was just part of it. It just felt like the characters weren't quite on. Charlie was the closest to herself, but even then I didn't feel like she was quite herself. It felt like they really just wanted to come up with a way to have Dorothy from Oz come in and play this kick-ass chick that Charlie would really be interested in. And this is how they decided to do it. And, you know, it frankly didn't work. I'm just right now, out of curiosity, seeing if this was written by one of the regulars. This was written by Robbie Thompson, who is the person who has written all of the other Charlie Bradbury episodes.
Right.
But...
Yeah, I mean, well, the only thing I can think of is also that, you know, they just were having too much fun to, you know, designing the rest of the Batcave, which, you know, well, you know, was some, you know, some nice stuff to see as they were running around all over the place. I mean, it was kind of odd having a semi-bottle episode, except, you know, they had to build a bunch of new sets for it. I think they got a bit too taken with, with some of those elements of, let's do our twist on Dorothy and, let's show off some more of the HQ here. And, some of the character stuff got left behind.
Yeah, the thing I said in my review was that this reminded me of an episode where they get to explore the TARDIS.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. With all of the positives and negatives that come along with that. Although I do kind of like the idea that they've got this basically, you know, post-steampunk computer down in the nether regions of this place. And they've got a garage that they didn't even know that they had. Which is good, because it's kind of like, wow, it's really hard to keep your secret lair secret when you've got the Impala sitting outside of the main entrance. But
if you can track it down on Google Maps, it's not the best.
Yeah.
Secret hideout.
But
going back to something you were saying before about Charlie's role in this episode and the ending of it, I agree. I was really frustrated when they sort of semi wrote her out at the conclusion, and to me, it sort of felt like maybe the writers just sort of got sick of fans asking, why can't we have more Charlie around? I mean, if she's out there and she's hunting, shouldn't she be in the show more often and stuff like that? And so the writers just eventually got fed up and said, okay, you know, we can't have her around all the time, so we're going to send her off to another dimension until we decide to bring her back.
Yeah, and I know that they can't have her around. We're talking about a show that's in its ninth season. They've pretty much rolled over all the... cast members that they can in order to try and get the costs down. It is what it is. Now, you know, I did speculate that, hey, you know, if they're going to keep talking about a spinoff that will explore other aspects of the supernatural universe, you know, sans Winchesters, you know, they could do a lot worse than Dorothy and Charlie running around, you know, do the distaff version of the Winchesters, kind of, but that I think would have been a better ending. Don't send them off to Oz, just send them out together. Mm-hmm. To go and hunt, and then, you know, you kind of got...
I could see those two having a very kind of neo-noir-esque PI agency in some big city, like Dresden Files-esque kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, definitely. One's old school brawny
and the other one's, savvy computer hacker. Like, that's just gold.
As if people wouldn't show up every week to watch Felicia Day on a show anyway. Yeah. But to set it in the supernatural universe, come on. Come on, CW. We're doing this for you.
Mm-hmm.
At this point. We've got a good track record with this stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, and I'm virtually certain it'll do better than the spinoff from that other show we referenced earlier. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be true. I did kind of think at least once that, you know, as much as this isn't a great Supernatural episode, it is at least showing how it's done to Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. But anyway, I gave this one a 7. There were elements that I liked about it, but overall I felt like it wasn't quite up to the usual par for Supernatural in terms of really jumping up to the 8s and 9s that we're used to. And part of it is that I feel like this is just continuing what's been a bit of an uneven start to this season. Bronson, how about you?
Yeah, I think a 7 sounds good. There were bits that I enjoyed and some interesting ideas, but the execution was just... I don't know, it just felt like a really hollow episode. Like, it felt like a bunch of things happening rather than a story that I could really get into and enjoy.
Edmund?
I'm good with a 7 as well for basically similar reasons. I mean, I think there was the potential there for something better, but just a little ham-fisted in the way that they put it together.
Yeah, let's put it this way. At least it didn't have implied bestiality. Yes, folks, go back to Man's Best Friend last season.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, getting that particular taste out of our mouth, let's go ahead and move on to a little bit more substantial material.
Yeah, a very nice palate cleanser.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Let's go ahead and run this promo for Person of Interest.
CBS Tuesday.
I found out it took Shaw, and you're not going to like it.
Mr. Finch and Mr. Reese's worst enemy.
The machine's given me a mission.
Has taken their best ally.
And I need you. Tell me what we're here to do.
They're working as a team. A scary one.
It's a conspiracy.
What are they saying?
Brace yourself.
You'll never see coming.
Gasoline! They're going to burn the place down with us in it!
New Person of Interest, CBS Tuesday, 10, 9 Central.
All right, and that's Person of Interest, Season 3, Episode 6, Mors Prematura. A newly freed Root receives instructions from the machine and requires Shaw's assistance to carry them out. That's one way of putting it. Meanwhile, yep. Finch and Reese receive a number for an amicable estate investigator. Really?
Amicable? Really?
Yeah. Okay. So I was just thinking, like, what episode were they watching? They were probably just dazzled by the awesomeness that is Root and Shaw working together. Yeah. Wow. Edmund, first thoughts on this one?
Sure. Yeah. Well, this in many ways, I mean, even though it wasn't a continuing storyline, I mean, this really felt like kind of like a, you know, the back end of a two-parter. You know, certainly going from the, you know, the shock ending of you know, Root taking Shaw at the end of the previous episode, and then rolling straight into this one. We've been speculating, you know, since that season ending arc last season about, you know, what the machine's turning into and what was going on with Root, and you know, this was, you know, pretty substantial, you know, I wouldn't call it backstory, but, you know, new evidence of, you know, this whole third option that's been popping up for those of us who do actually pause the machine graphics. And, you know, yeah, I mean, Shaw and Root together was something we've been, you know, anticipating since last season. And, but certainly more in a sort of, you know, kick-ass, what are they going to do to each other way, but to wind up having them actually teaming up. And, you know, I did love that, you know, Fusco's been kind of on the sidelines for a while, you know, but he did get the one great line about, you know, well, yeah, looks like they're a team, a scary team. And, of course, then sort of starting off with, you know, this, what seems like these two tracks, you know, and also kind of unusually, you know, yeah, I mean, following Root and Shaw, while at the same time following this number, and then just the way they started bringing everything together, you know, initially with Collier and Vigilance showing up with the investigator, who of course was Kirk Acevedo from Fringe, his story getting, you know, that ongoing thread from just a few episodes ago, you know, getting picked up immediately, you know, in previous seasons, you know, they'd sort of, you know, throw in more standalone episodes and, you know, and not have such a, you know, so many running elements. And, you know, I'm very glad to see it this season. You know, they are definitely keeping the serialized nature going, you know, while at the same time, you know, giving what seemed to be the standard numbers. And, and yeah, I mean, you know, and then, I mean, that wonderful shock of realizing the machine has actually sent them all on the same mission, you know, all converging on that square in downtown New York, was just a wonderful twist. And, you know, yeah, I mean, this was, yet another, you know, leap forward for the show, I thought. And that's even leaving out the Carter and HR stuff, which we'll get to in a bit.
Yeah. But, Bronstam, anything to add to that?
Not a lot. You do a good job of covering the show. I agree. I was it just blew my mind at the point where I realized that the machine had sent both teams out on the same job.
Yeah.
With you know, slightly different objectives and coming out from different angles. It was just, just a very, very cool moment. I like the fact that the show is so good at making me reconsider what I know about, you know, just things about the central premise. You know, still puzzling out what the machine's doing, what it's capable of, and you know, and then on top of that, it was just a really, really cool little, you know, little thing for them to solve, and you know, that big fun sequence at the end. I just had a ball with the show, with the episode, and then you had the stuff with Carter and HR. I like that they're sort of doing like what they did with Fusco back in season one, but a lot quicker. It's just like, this starts out as I've got something on you, and therefore you're going to help me out. And in the space of one episode, it's progressing towards, well, look, you know, maybe the people you're with aren't particularly good people, and, you know, I'm, you know, the idea of Carter actually starting to convince this guy that, well, maybe by helping her, he's actually doing the right thing. I really like that, and if that's how quickly the storyline is progressing, you know, in the space of two episodes, I'm very interested in where they're going to be with where they're going to be by the end of the season.
Yeah, I was really impressed with that. I mean, going from, you know, yeah, the, you know, Lasky is this sort of cocky, you know, almost cartoonish figure to you know, generating that much sympathy for him, you know, in the course of just that one episode. And I mean, I particularly love that moment when, you know, when he's, you know, the next morning when he's, you know, this does seem to be Simmons' favorite hazing ritual of, yeah, make the kid go bury a body. But that next morning, you know, when he's sort of sitting there going like, oh, what could be worse than burying a friend? You know, Carter's just sort of looking at him going like, oh, kid, you just, you know, you haven't thought this through yet, have you? I mean, just a really nice job of, building him into, you know, a real human being and not just the star character. So, and at the same time, of course, you know, giving us some crucial intel that, you know, HR is seeding the police force with nice, loyal Russian plants. So, you know, and just, you know, just something else to file away for, later on in the season. And, of course, something our little basement Don Elias to help out on, you know, because, you know, he was about the only one who was sort of, you know, other than Fusco, who's been really on the sidelines recently. But, you know, yeah, I just kind of feel like, you know, Carter's got him in her back pocket, or thinks she's got him in her back pocket, but presumably that is going to change soon. But, the other thing is, I mean, you know, in terms of the, you know, what they're building for this season is, you know, I've decided that it's, you know, we have the relevance, the irrelevance, and now we have the necessaries. You know, just the big question now is what does the machine think they're necessary for? Which, you know, is a question that could go so many different ways, and that's what I love about the show, is the way they set these things up. And, you know, and I could think of, you know, four different outcomes, and you know, but I'm more than happy to wait to see which one they've actually chosen. The other element is, you know, certainly I am in complete support of Kirk Acevedo being so obviously prepped as a new recurring character, because I thought he did a great job in this, and certainly he has some very valuable.
Yes, I would be all for that.
Yeah, no, I thought they were pretty much putting a big exclamation point on it at the end. That you had that little femoral artery thing you've got to recover from, but you know, yeah, we'll be calling.
Yeah, they seem to really be building towards something big. Coming up very quickly, because there's so many things that are percolating in the background, but it feels like they're moving faster than an end of season culmination would imply.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big moment of transition coming, and this is all introduction. And yeah, I'm just waiting for something to happen that's going to just really kick everything into high gear. Mm-hmm. Just in time for November sweeps. Look at that.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah. But yeah, I mean the fact that we're only at episode six, so you know, depending on how many episodes I get, a little over a quarter of the way through, and the amount of stuff they've set up from that, where everybody was at the opening is quite amazing, and I'm just looking forward to seeing where they take all of this.
Well, I think that they typically get 22 to 24.
Yeah.
They get a little extra because they're getting great ratings.
Yeah.
And so that would place the usual, if you go by the usual three-act format that just about every show does these days, the next three episodes...
7, 8, 9, which all happened to be in the month of November.
Exactly. It's funny how that works. But yeah, it does all seem to be pointing to the next few episodes being a big shift as they move into what would typically be a complication phase. So in considering the first two seasons, that's pretty much the way it went and things really kind of got messy.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. Let's see, Edmund, you gave this one a 9 out of 10.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I was close to making it two in a row, but my only hesitation for now is that it's a minor one. Is just, Collier and Vigilance is the current big bad. I'm just assuming they're a front for somebody because they're good, and I like the fact that they've been obviously monitoring things and are aware of the man in the suit, not just from their last encounter, but they're the only reason I could find to downgrade it now. Give them some room for whatever it is they're about to spring on.
And Bronstone?
I will happily give this episode a 9. It's one of those things where it was fantastic, but I know they're going to top it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the main thing that's going against me in terms of wanting to a 10 even. But this was fantastic.
Yeah, this is this show is definitely back on its track, to say the least. It's way up there, and I gave it a 9 as well. So 9s all around. Yeah, exceptional. Let's go ahead then, and we're going to take a little break, and then we will be back with the rest of this show.
We'll be right back.
All right, and we are back, and as one might imagine from the our mid-show break there, we're going to be moving into Arrow. Oh yes, and here is the promo.
Who are you?
Once you know, your life will never be the same. I'll give you a minute to let it sink in.
This mayor has only one goal, to rule the Glades at the barrel of a gun.
Did I say something funny?
Is that blood on your face? Who taught you to shave?
Arrow, all new. This Wednesday at 8, 7 Central on the CW.
All right, and that would be Arrow, Season 2, Episode 4, Crucible. A man called the Mayor brings illegal guns into the Glades, so Oliver sponsors a Cash for Guns event to rid the city of weapons. But the Mayor and his gang crash the event and seriously injure Sin. Sorry for the break there. When the Canary learns Sin is in the hospital, she seeks revenge. Meanwhile, Donner asks Laurel to dinner, and Diggle reconnects with an old friend. Ooh, okay. Well, another show that is kind of hitting its stride, to say the least. I think we were talking about last time that Arrow had kind of upped the ante a bit for the second season and are kind of owning a more comic book centric way of doing things, but in complete keeping with the style and the just thematic strengths of the first season, and just the visual strengths as well. Everything about this show is just kicking into high gear, and this episode continues where the last one left off for me. It's just more good action between Arrow and Canary. We got a little bit more background on Canary. Just that first...
a little bit more background?
Yeah, a little bit more background. I put on Twitter about 5 seconds after they made the reveal at the beginning, and I know that there are a lot of people that kind of guessed that this was true.
Yeah, I think that was part of my confusion, actually.
Yeah, but you know, one of the things that kind of always sat in the back of my mind of, you know, it can't possibly be Sarah, is the fact that the actress was different,
right?
And no, they really did pull the old let's recast the role. And as a way of smoke
screen. Character got more important. Let's bring someone else in.
Hmm? Sorry, I missed that. Press them.
Oh, no, I was just commenting on on the recasting thing. But honestly, if you guys all saw that coming, then you're better people than I did, because
I caught some of the it kind of got leaked out accidentally over the summer.
Oh, okay.
I caught
wind. Okay, see, apparently I missed that then, because I was genuinely surprised. They went into those flashbacks and I'm just like, wait, no. No,
but okay. How
that was a good.
Is it, though?
It was such a well done reveal, especially taking into consideration the who Blackberry is or is supposed to be, and developing both the current Starling City storyline and the island storyline, and building up a connection between Black Canary and it works so well. It helps codify so many little things about the Starling City, you know, the vigilante club that's slowly getting bigger. Yeah, I dug the reveal, and I dug where they're taking this character.
Yeah, when we were speculating, like who could this be? Because I mean, certainly if it wasn't Laurel. And the way that they were talking was like, yeah, you know, like Oliver's going to have this, you know, ongoing relationship that's going to be, you know, complicated and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, wait, you've been setting up for a season, all this backstory for the Lance family and how Canary intersects into that. So how could that possibly work? And as soon as they made the reveal, it was like, and problem solved. Okay. So well done,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah. Yeah, not just problem solved, and yeah, there's even more Oliver hasn't been telling us about what happened in those 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Including the fact that, yes, he really did think she was dead, but just from the second time.
Yeah. when they went back to the island. But it, yeah. This, that from that moment on, this episode pretty much won me over, even with the whole silly name of the mayor. But just the fact that they had essentially all these DC character introductions. I mean, they have Brother Blood, which they actually managed to make that character not seem nearly so corny as the name implies. And with the connection between Black Canary and the League of Assassins, you know, there's lots of ways that they can weave all of this stuff together. And it just, to me, it's all working really well. And this episode is just knocking it out of the park for me. And again, it was, you know, the fact that now this addition to the Vigilante Club, as you were calling it, has a direct relationship to everyone else who is slowly but surely getting closer to becoming part of Oliver's extended support team. You know, the Lances in the previous episode pretty much lined up with it, at least, you know, previously Detective Lance. So and of course this is the kind of drama that is going to just explode. The longer he doesn't tell them, the worse it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And finally, also, I really like the fact that she immediately knew who he was.
Yes. Like,
thank you.
Somebody. Finally.
Yes, exactly.
It's just a hood.
Right.
Some green makeup.
At some point, like in season 3 or 4, fate willing that the show makes it that far, I just want like everybody who has ever pretended not to know who he is to just all be there and like say, yeah, we knew. It was obvious.
We knew, but you'd had such a hard time. We were just playing along.
Yeah, you looked
for your own benefit.
You were going to be so sad if we told you how bad that was. The hood doesn't even go in front of your face. But at any rate, that I really enjoyed, and you know, and so much so that this thing with Laurel and her kind of downward spiral, I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt to. Because, you know, at some point they're going to have to build her up as the successor for her sister.
Right.
And yeah. So in the meantime, they do have to kind of break her down to fundamentals. And well, just because she took responsibility for her part in Tommy's demise doesn't mean that she's suddenly over the whole thing. If anything, now she's just going to be blaming herself more and therefore more inclined to do this kind of thing. So,
right. And, you know,
now it's gone from a subconscious guilt to a really conscious guilt.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And certainly, you know, we all know it does, you know, it does run in families. So, you know, yeah,
yes.
Given her dad's history, it, you know, yeah, there's, you know, it does make a certain amount of sense. And, you know, as well, certainly, you know, his reaction and concern. So, but yeah, I mean, I was rolling my eyes a little bit through that, but I, now that we've talked it through, I think I agree with you, John, that, you know, yeah, there was more than enough other stuff going on in this episode to, you know, to sort of, counterbalance that. And, you know, and even that element, you know, has its uses. So, you know, the one thing I did think was, you know, sort of a, you know, a little holdover from season one, you know, was this thing sort of, you know, introducing, you know, what turns out to be this one shot villain and sort of having to introduce him, establish him as a threat. And then, you know, obviously that wasn't the, you know, Brother Blood's intent at the end, but, you know, yeah. And then sort of shuffling him off, but, you know, but, you know, they are certainly doing enough to bring in, you know, more ongoing storylines that, you know, I'm willing to give him benefit of the doubt on that as well.
Yeah. Any other last thoughts on this one, Brunson?
More please.
Yeah. Yeah, well, luckily we have an entire season practically still left here. This is episode 4.
4? Good God, yes.
Exactly. I mean, between this and Person of Interest, it's like, wow, okay. Bring it on. So yeah, Nadim gave this one a 9 out of 10. How about you, Edmund? What would you give it?
I think I will actually give it an 8. On the basis of just a couple of, you know, a couple of things didn't quite sit as well with me, and it's also sort of it's one of those 8s with the proviso that I'm giving them room for, you know, probably as we were mentioning the person of interest with sweeps coming up, probably just some room for them to expand in the next few episodes.
Yes, and Bronslum.
I'm almost inclined to go higher, but yeah, I'll stick with the 8 out of 10 because it some of the stuff that was happening with Laura felt a bit on the nose, but the strength of the story and the big reveal I thought was all really awesome. This is just going gangbusters in terms of setting up, you know, more story and more character stuff that I really want to watch.
Mm-hmm. I actually stuck with the 9 that Nadim gave it. Maybe because I really was not expecting the reveal that it was Sarah Lance. I know that there are going to be some people there like, how did you not know that? But yeah, I must have missed the flub over the summer as well. But I just really liked all the implications of that and the fact that they weren't backing off of it. They didn't do this at the end of the episode and just leave you hanging. This was something that they hit right off the bat and explored throughout the entire episode and made it very clear that it's just the beginning of all the complications that this is going to cause.
Yeah. So, and actually, just to your point of the way they're building the team, I also liked, you know, the way of, you know, it was, you know, I mean, the way they've been developing Felicity has been great all season, you know, but just that, you know, she was the one who first figured out, you know, oh, wait a minute, she's not following you, she's following Laura.
Yeah. Which was the first big hint, but at least they didn't leave it lingering. So yeah, that not quite on the same level as the Person of Interest episode, but close. Yeah, I can see that. Okay, well, we still have a little bit of time left here, and I know that Edmund and I both talked about some of the things that we've been doing lately, but Bronstom, it's been a while since we've been able to check on you and what you've been doing besides work.
Yeah, fair bit of work. It was the Melbourne Cup yesterday, and that was horrific. But what is it? It's been almost a month since one of the local sort of convention mobs out here put on this event that I got to go to for free, sort of last minute. It was really fun. The two main things was that they got Tom Hiddleston out to do a Q&A because they were doing some promotion for Thor: The Dark World. And that was really entertaining. He's a very, very charismatic dude, just very good speaker, very smart, and surprisingly really good at Owen Wilson impersonations. Who'd have thought? The video is online and you can look up basically him, Tom Hiddleston doing Loki lines from the Avengers as Owen Wilson. It's interesting. But the other thing was that we got to see all of the footage of upcoming Marvel movies that previously had been Comic-Con exclusives. So this was before Thor: Dark World came out, and got to see a couple scenes from that and a cool trailer. And then we got to see a Captain America: Winter Soldier trailer. Again, this was before the trailer that came out recently. So. And it really, it lent a lot of weight to my theory about where the end of the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to go. And then one of the big ones is that we got to see a trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy. And it just looks like crazy fun. Just to kind of get a frame of reference, basically the trailer introduces all the characters through a police lineup. just them all sort of in front of the John C. Reilly's character, whose name I forget even though I read it only today, is basically just like reading out all their rap sheets while they're all in front of like the you know, grungy sci-fi version of the thing with all the measurements beside it, and which the trailer was awesome. It looks like it's going to be a really, really fun movie. It's hard to quote The character that speaks the most is Star-Lord, but he's hard to quote because he swore a little bit and stuff like that. But it looks cool. And then they showed the brief announcement trailer for Avengers Age of Ultron. And you don't really see much except a very kind of shadowy side-on view of Ultron's head, which was cool. Mm. But yeah, that was pretty fun. And then fast forward to, what was it, last Sunday, when I got to see Thor the Dark World, and I thought it was really awesome. it retained a lot of what I really enjoyed about the first Thor, which was the humor, the dynamic between the sort of very playing up the family dynamic, but at the same time it had more action, expanded the scope into like a very kind of science fantasy sort of thing. Christopher Eccleston was good, if I think a bit underused. I liked the way that they kept Loki as part of the story, without having him simply do what he'd been doing for the last couple of movies. There was, I just had a lot of fun with this movie. I was surprised how many of the characters from the past movies they brought back. They had a really, really good cameo that I'm not going to spoil. There were two credits scenes. One was mid credits and one was post credits. So kind of like the Avengers.
Yep.
And the mid credits one goes a long way towards setting up a couple of future movies. So that was really cool. And yeah, it was just such a fun movie. Even though I think a lot of the plot points you can kind of see coming from his way, the presentation was just really, really fun. And then as you get towards the end, they do manage to deliver a couple of big surprises. So yeah, very, very, two thumbs up, highly recommend. It's just, yeah, it was great fun.
Yeah. You and your early,
Yes, although I believe when this is going out, it's a wonderful recommendation for everybody to go see it.
True, since this will be going out the day of its release here in the U.S., or at least thereabouts, certainly the Friday of its first full weekend. Yeah, go ahead, go see it, because I hear that it's critically perhaps getting a little bit of flack, but fans in general are more favorable towards it. But we'll see. I guess we should also mention, too, the news that, and I think we kind of called this one a while ago, that not only did we feel like there's indications that things in Captain America Winter Soldier are going to have an impact on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but the announcement that, yes, in fact, there will be follow-up on some kind of elements from Dark World on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I really have a prediction, but I don't want to spoil something for the movie.
I'm sure that you could predict very well.
But I'm pretty sure. I've got a pretty good idea that I know at least one of the things that the team is going to have to deal with. And if I'm right, it's going to be awesome.
But that's exactly the thing that I at least have been kind of waiting for, and I know that for the people that have been complaining that there's not enough of that sort of stuff going on, it's like, I know that Gary is going to feel exactly the opposite because he already feels like there's too much, but I'm sitting back and I'm saying, people, be patient.
Mm-hmm.
They're setting the stage, they're introducing the team so that when this stuff can go down, it will go down, and they're not going to be trying to introduce the characters at the exact same time.
Right. Yeah, as you were saying, the person of interest, 20-something episode season.
Yes.
They have to set a few things up here.
The long game.
Yes.
And, yeah, look at that. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is, let's see, where are they at? They're at something like episode 6 or 7?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gee.
And a movie just opened.
Movie's opening. And supposedly, like a week or so after that, the episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to deal with it. That's right around episode 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
Funny how that works. Sure. Gee, that pattern comes up again. Right in November sweeps, no less.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It just means that I absolutely need to see the film before that episode airs. But yeah, it's I'm excited about the prospects of what they can do there. And the more that I see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I know that, unfortunately, Brunslum, you haven't been able to join in our recent discussions on this, but I'm really digging this show quite a lot. And I'm kind of weary of some of the criticisms that are out there for it, because I feel like people are even less inclined to be patient with it because they're expecting this thing to be an absolute perfect gem right out of the gate. And I'm sorry, you don't get a Firefly-level introduction for every single show that, even from the same guy who made it. I mean, the first season of Buffy was rough, the first season of Angel was rough, the first season of Dollhouse was rough. All for different reasons. And he's trying to juggle a TV show that is doing something that has never really been tried before. Tying it into not just an existing movie franchise, but in real time.
As movies and are ongoing movie
yes,
franchise.
This is kind of unprecedented territory, and people that should know better, people that are in the community, the geek community, are the ones that are the least patient to just let this thing develop and be what it needs to be. And yeah, it's very frustrating to me that this is probably about as awesome an opportunity as we get to see this kind of shared universe unfold. Remember when people lost their collective crap when Ron Howard made those really ambitious plans for Stephen King Dark Tower series?
Absolutely. I was just thinking about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people thought that was the best thing, the best just concept ever. And everyone was saying, wow, this could never really work because no one's ever made this happen before. Well, now it is. And people are like, complaining because they can't instantly get into the characters, or it's not a blockbuster on TV every week. And come on, it's really weird. I mean, come on, even Firefly had the train job. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
But anyway, I have a feeling I'm preaching to the choir here.
Pretty much on this side, anyway.
Yeah. If you disagree with me, tell me why out there, listeners. Maybe send some feedback. Speaking of, if you keep your eyes on VOG Network, there may be some changes coming up that are going to be rolling out on some other shows, and I have full intentions of rolling those same changes out here on Critical Myth. So keep your eyes peeled, keep your ears to the ground, listen to what's going on, and be prepared to participate, because that's what we do on VOG Network. We participate. Ha. Anyway, anything else, Bronze Thumb, that you can bring us up to date on other than seeing great movies before we get a chance to? Did we lose Bronstam again?
I think we might have.
Let's see. He got frustrated too with all the criticisms of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He just can't handle it.
Yep.
You know what it is that he's really got a thing for Simmons. That's my guess. He's conflicted between his love for Felicity on Arrow. Nope, that didn't draw him out. Okay. Just in case he wasn't quite paying attention or his mic is muted and he can't seem to figure out how to get it unmuted. But there we are. All right, well, that's as good a place as any then to go ahead and bring this one to a close. Next week, obviously, we are going to be back on track with, let's see, let's go down the list here. We are going to have more Walking Dead, Covert Affairs, Haven, Elementary, Homeland, Supernatural, Person of Interest, Arrow, a whole bunch of quick hits. And yeah, it's going to be some good stuff. And unless I'm mistaken, we are not too far away from the premiere of Almost Human.
Indeed.
And have you seen any of the early footage that they've shown? They show the first few minutes or whatever?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I am very much looking forward to this and really, really hoping it's as good as what they've shown so far.
Yeah, I have some... this is a show that, after just talking about being patient with the show and not having too high an expectation, this one has been whetting my appetite for a long time.
Yes.
And is Bronsthumb back in from wherever he, whatever other dimension he fell into? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Have you got?
Yes.
Go ahead.
No. I was going to say something, and then I feel better on it.
Okay, then. Have you seen any of the preview footage for Almost Human?
I'm not, other than a very early promo trailer that made me think, okay, it's the guys from Fringe making the TV show version of the iRobot movie.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily a movie. It just didn't get me super excited straight away.
Yeah, you might want to look into the footage that they've been previewing out there. Because it definitely is striking the right chord, at least for me. And Edmund, anyway. He just agreed as well. It might be worth looking up, because it's going to be coming out by the time this goes out, in like about the next couple weeks anyway.
Yeah, they've been moving it around, but I think they finally settled on that two-night premiere on the November 16th and 17th.
Yes. I'll be in New York when that happens. As the case may be. All right. Any last thoughts for this show, guys?
I will just leave you with a teaser that I've actually finally got to Dracula on my DVR, and it is surprisingly good, and it has Victoria Smurfit as a character she has self-described as the cougar version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
You mean the show that I've been avoiding is actually something I might have to go and watch?
Yes.
Okay.
I hate when that happens.
Fair enough. How about you, Bronsthumb? Any other last thoughts?
No, I'm all thoughted out.
All thoughted out. All right. I will just, as my last thought, say that speaking of preview footage, or at least teaser stuff, not only is Lost Girl coming soon, but also Sherlock. They announced the dates for when it's going to be airing here in the U.S. in January. So, I can only imagine that's going to be right around that same time over in the UK. Sherlock, Series 3. I was expecting a little more squee. I'm now disappointed. Okay, yeah. It's because Bronsthumb's sitting there thinking, when am I going to have time to watch this shit?
We've been burned before.
Okay? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no, I was sitting back in my chair with a sly smile on my face, but that doesn't work on audio, does it?
It probably is not. I don't think it quite translated. As I said, you know, Bronsthumb is just thinking, I'm probably going to be working. So... That's okay. While I'm up in the wilds of Canada, I'll be thinking about the fact that it's getting warmer down there. Something I can't say for here. All right, enough banter. Until next time. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...